broadcasting in English.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Programming here at Radio Prague. I'm Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's show, we'll have a new edition of Mailbox for you in which we'll answer your questions and address your comments. Some of the topics discussed include Václav Havel, the former dissident and ex-president's 75th birthday. We'll have best wishes then. Also discussed, this month's mystery person revealed, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Mailbox will be followed by another edition of Czech Life. And in this week's edition, Sarah Borovka will be talking to Czech oncologist Pavel Boček. And following that, we'll have another edition of our long-running series from the archives. Let's get started straight away, though, with Mailbox, hosted as always by Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox. Thank you very much indeed for all your valuable feedback. It's good to know that you are out there following our broadcasts and responding to the stories. On Wednesday, former Czech President Václav Havel celebrated his 75th birthday, and there have been well wishes among Radio Prague's audiences too. Mary Lou Krenick from Texas wrote,
"It was a joy to read that former President Václav Havel's friends are surprising him with a birthday party on Saturday. For all that he has been through in his life, the world is fortunate to have him reach the age of 75. I wish him many more years. As a human rights activist, he has become a beacon for the peaceful and orderly way to conduct dissent and political and social change."
Also from the United States, Linda Mary Hauptmann writes,
"I just read my email bulletin about the surprise party for Mr. Havel's 75th birthday. I sure hope he isn't listening to the broadcast about it or reading about it in his email. Or is there a Czech tradition where Mr. Havel would prove what a superior playwright actor he is by pretending to be completely surprised? If it means anything, please tell him happy birthday from the US, from this particular loyal Radio Prague reader."
Thank you so much for your comments as well as your answers to our September Mystery Czech competition. Let's hear a few of them. Hans Werner Lolicke from Denmark writes,
"The person you're asking for is Josef Kodelka, born in Boskovice in 1938. He studied in Prague to be an engineer, but photography grabbed him, and his genius has been to capture the right moment. He became world famous by a series of pictures documenting the Soviet invasion of 1968. After getting asylum in the UK, he settled in France and still does documentary photography in black and white."
Colin Law from New Zealand writes,
"As a teenager, Josef saved up for his first camera, a Bakelite camera, far removed from today's electronic gadgets used to take photographs. That must have been about the same time that I began to take photographs with a Bakelite camera. Whereas photography remained a hobby for me, Josef went on to become a professional photographer of world renown."
David Eldridge from England sent in this answer.
"On being presented with a set of Josef Kodelka's photographs, to me they are immediately recognizable as Czech. What causes that immediate response, I am not sure. But from then on, there is only the progression to the confirmation that they are indeed Czech. Josef Kodelka is on record as saying that 'no one can buy me' is important for me. I refuse assignments even for projects that I've decided to do anyhow. However, it was in 1986 he was invited by the French government to document the urban and rural landscape of France, which he accepted and became a French citizen in 1987.
Charles Konecny from the United States wrote,
"Although Kodelka graduated from university as an engineer, he migrated to his interest in photography where he made his mark. He won acclaim for his photos of Roma life, which, as critics noted, appeared to be mysterious and brooding, augmented by their grainy black-and-white look. More of a news look were his Prague photos of the 1968 invasion, which also won awards. Of course, since he dared to publish the invasion photos, he had to leave the country or get arrested. But Josef overcame that problem, and in his travels he went on to receive many other awards, Also, he was accepted by Magnum Photo, which after reading I found to be a very prestigious photography group. Those interested in photography as a career would do well to study his techniques. I wish the good Czech continued success.
Jayanta Chakrabarty from India sent us this answer.
Josef Koudelka is the man credited with visual recording of the most startling images of the 1968 Soviet invasion of Prague, even capturing the exact time of 11 p.m. on a bystander's wristwatch, and of a protester waving a flag of resistance. Considered as the last of the contemporary hardened romantics of reportage, Koudelka has always been guided by the pursuit of freedom, whether for his beloved country or for the gypsies he has been so closely associated with.
Mike Shea from Scotland wrote,
"Surely this is Josef Koudelka. He recorded the Soviet invasion in 1968 and was forced into exile in England in 1970. His work, published under the alias PP, Prague Photographer, was recognized by the award of the Robert Capa Gold Medal for photographs requiring extreme courage in 1969, and many awards were to follow. He became a French citizen in 1987 and was finally able to return to Czechoslovakia in 1991. He currently spends his time between Prague and France, from where he continues to photograph European landscapes."
Qian Xioping from China wrote,
"Koudelka's photographic accomplishments include the Robert Capa Gold Medal in 1969 for his work chronicling the tumultuous period of the Warsaw Pact Army's intervention in Prague. Koudelka moved to England in 1970, where he soon joined Magnum Photo. He was awarded two grants from the Arts Council of Great Britain in 1973 and 1976. Koudelka became a naturalized citizen of France in 1987. He also received awards from the National Endowment for the Arts in 1980 and the Grand Prix National in France in 1987. His numerous monographs include Exiles, The Black Triangle, Chaos, and Limestone."
Thank you so much for your answers, and this time our prize goes to Mike Shea from Scotland. My congratulations, and here is another chance for those of you who haven't been lucky this time. Millions of people the world over use contact lenses to improve their eyesight, but perhaps few are aware of the fact that the aid was invented by a Czech scientist. We want you to tell us his name by the end of October and send it to english@radio.cz. Please keep your emails coming, and don't forget that you can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page. Until next time, take care.
Pavla Hráková with another edition of Mailbox. And as always, do keep your questions and comments and letters coming. You never know, they just might make it onto the air. We turn now to today's Czech life, and that is with Sarah Borůvka.
Dr. Pavel Boček is a Czech child oncologist who works at Motol Hospital's Children Oncology Ward, sees patients in his own practice, and has founded a charity for children with cancer. He also spent some time working in the United States, where he says he learned a lot about communicating with patients. For this edition of Czech Life, I spoke to Dr. Boček about his work, the field of child oncology, and what first made him decide to go into that specific area of medicine.
It was in the medical school, because you have many disciplines, and of course we have also the children oncology, which was a part of the classical clinical oncology, and the head of the children oncology department was Dr. Josef Koudelka, who was excellent teacher, who was excellent person, who was excellent doctor, and he was very in his part of medicine, so I was very happy to follow his steps, because it was very challenging part of medicine, the children oncology.
And how does the work differ, the medical work differ, if you work with children as compared to working with adults?
It's a big difference, because you have child has a many period in his childhood, since newborn through the adolescence. That's the first. The second, the child, they cannot say, I have a pain here or there. So you have to be skillful with the diagnosis, and of course you have to be careful with the medication, because the child, they are still growing, so you can bring him to late effects or whatever. At least then the child has no idea what's going on if especially has a tumor or cancer. So for them is the bad news. They have to stay in hospital. So, and of course, you have to work with parents.
And of course, many will know that the field of oncology is one of the fields in medicine where there's still a lot of research being done, a lot of questions unanswered. How would you say has this field developed from when you first started studying it up till now? Has there been any breakthroughs, any really big changes?
I have been started in 1985, and this time the survival rate in general was around 40-50% till today, which is over than 74%, and it's a huge development, huge progress, and huge success. And we can say in Czech Republic, which is 10 million inhabitants, we have 350 children with cancer every year, so it should say one day, one child. And we have, when I was starting, there was only one center in Prague, now it's in Brno, Olomouc, Ostrava. And the most frequent disease, like acute lymphoblastic leukemia, the kids, they are treated in the region city. And of course, we have a new drugs, we have a new approaches, we have a results of research, and we have a bone marrow transplant. So very generally, the treatment is very aggressive, very improved. And, of course, we have to be very careful about the late effects after the treatment.
And if we talk about, this is a very general question, but if we talk about what characteristics make, according to your opinion, a good doctor, what do you think is important?
Good doctor is it's a really difficult question, because I think that good doctor has to be professionally, has to professional knowledges, be very good in medicine in his field. And then I think he has to be able to communicate with parents, children, and to be in touch, but in very special way, not very cold, not very warm, to find his way and to be like friends with the children, especially in the children cancer field, because, you know, the treatment is usually for a year or maybe sometimes for years, so you are like part of family.
And I would like to also talk about this time you spent in the U.S. Maybe you can explain first how you went there, on which kind of program, and then what your experience was like.
It was 1998. I was asking some friends if they told me, hey, Pavel, do you want to try the Fulbright Fellowship? I said, yes, why not? So I was going to the Fulbright Commission, go through the with my plans, what I should do and what I should study in States. And fortunately, I have been chosen for the University of Minnesota, which is one of the leading university in the children cancer field. And I was there for 10 months, and there was a three main direction. There was, of course, the children oncology. The second was the fundraising, and the third was the communication between the patients and people which they work in hospital.
So you have worked in the American health sector and in the Czech health sector, which must be very different. Maybe you can explain a few of the main differences between the two.
It's very difficult. From my view, if you are working in a very good university hospital, which I can compare, there in Czech Republic, we didn't have money in this time, and still we don't have money for many categories which are very, normal in States. So I would like to say that there is many psychosocial workers, ergotherapists, social workers, the nurses, they have some categories which we don't have. So there is a many other people which are create the team which is taking care about the children cancer patient. But it's not only in the cancer field, so that's the biggest difference.
On the other hand, did you see any shortcomings in the American system or anything where you thought maybe this we do better?
I think if I can compare the basic, for example, basic pediatric care, that's absolutely excellent. Even I can compare with the European system. So we have a very good system of vaccination. We have a very good system to check up of the children, very scheduled. So I think it is great. But in the adult medicine, it's not so great. So I think the American, they has a problem with the how they will facing the fact that there's, I think, 50 million people is not insured in states, which is a huge number. So I think there is, must be some health reform system.
Of course. And then if I think you touched on this already, patient communication, that is also a very important part of treatment. Would you explain maybe a bit more in detail what are important elements of how you communicate with patients?
That's the important question, and I was talking about this kind of care. I feel that the Czech doctors and nurses, they don't have time for the good communication, and they say just, I will tell you example. In the U.S., they say in the morning, by the morning checkup, you have to go to the X-ray for lungs, because we have to know if the lungs are clear, if they work perfect. You go there and you go there, we will have results in the afternoon, and they will be speaking about this, and also some injection and treatment which you are receiving that should has late effects on the lungs. So we would like to see how the lungs looks. That's the normal. And in Czech, they just go some nurse or somebody to the patient and say, you go to the X-ray. That's it. No reason, no why, you know. It's maybe strongly to explain, but we miss the communication, like everyday communication or the better communication between the nurses and doctors. Of course, in states, there are psychosocial workers which they communicate about the daily program, about the daily schedule, and doctor is coming as really doctor, as we know from the American movie, and he's talking about disease, about prognosis. So I still miss also the sensitive and the human way to explain why you are here, what we will be doing, what is your diagnosis, and what we are expecting from treatment. Of course, I can see the big improvement in many ways, but from my personal experiences, many friends call me, I have my grandmother there and there, and she is in hospital, we don't know nothing after 3 days, and I feel that's a big mistake.
And it sounds like this is an incredibly hard thing to do day to day. So you yourself, how do you deal with this emotionally? And do you ever find yourself in a situation where maybe a patient's struggle is so hard to watch that it affects you outside of work? Or have you managed to always separate that?
Of course, you are right, because from the beginning of my career, it was very horrible. I came home and I was thinking, what is doing this patient, what is doing this patient, and it was a very emotionally hard, and I was starting to quit off these and try to relax with sport, music and whatever. But when you come to patient, then you have to be involved in his thought, in his ideas and his suffering, and to be able to listen to him and to help him. But some people tell that you have to be only professional. I don't think so. It's true. You have to be slightly emotionally involved. And I have many friends, even the children died, they are still friends with me. And thanks for that, we were doing good job. Even the child was not successful with his fight with life. And of course, I have many children, which they are now adults and come to our hospital with their children, and it's very great to see them survive and survive them well.
That must be a very nice feeling to do, meet the ones that made it through. And I think you also founded a charity, Sluneční paprsek pro děti, or a ray of sun for children. Can you describe your mission a bit and what kind of work your charity actually does?
I was inspired actually in States, because I have seen many summer camps for the kids with leukemia, which was a great job from the people which they were doing, because they were trying to like Indians fight the leukemia, and they play against the leukemic cells, and I was amazed, and I said, yes, we save many children lives, but what we can do for them afterwards, because they have to go back to their life, because they miss for 1 or 2 years their school, their friends, their some activities. So the idea of the sunrise is to invite these children 2, 3, 4 years after the cancer treatment, radiotherapy, to the summer camp, which, because we don't have a sea, so we are going with the trip with the airplane to the sea. And there are doctors, psychologists, there are physiotherapists. And of course, there is a medical part, because some of them, they still have light effects with movement or with some problems. And there is a part of psychosocial work and play, and to have more friends and so.
And lastly, what are your hopes for the future of your charity, and also maybe professionally in the field of child oncology? What is it that you think would really make you happy if there was some progress in that area?
We would like to take in our hospital the children which we know that we can save, because sometimes we still have children which are misdiagnosed, or in, they come very late. So I hope this number of those children will be decreasing. And for my charity, we have a big charity concert, I think, December 17. And then we have a very nice, I hope, opening evening, March 20, will be some exhibition, which they will be participating, actually, the American artist, and collect money and take more and more children to the sea.
Czech oncologist Pavel Boček ending that edition of Czech Life, produced by Sara Borufka. Don't forget, you can find more news at our website, www.radio.cz, and you can even get our free daily email letter. So if you want the latest in news from the Czech Republic, be sure to sign up for that. Also, you can join in the latest discussion on Facebook. Now we turn to our final feature for this day, from the archives, with David Vaughan.
A.J.P. Taylor was one of the best known and most influential British historians of the 20th century. He is remembered today in particular for his provocative left-wing political views and his conviction that German history made the country uniquely inclined towards aggression and expansionism. This made him an ardent opponent of attempts to rebuild Germany's economy after the war, and a strong supporter of Czechoslovakia's growing alliance with the Soviet Union. In July 1946, just after elections which saw the communists emerge as the strongest single party, Taylor visited Czechoslovakia. Here is an extract from a talk he gave for Czechoslovak radio, which, with the benefit of hindsight, seems very naive.
For the first time in any country, there is a communist prime minister who has reached his position by strictly democratic methods. On the other hand, this isn't a communist government. It's a coalition. The communists haven't got a majority in the parliament. They're the biggest single party. And even if they haven't got the power, they have, I think, the biggest share of the responsibility. That's an important difference. It means that in future the communists are going to be blamed if things go wrong, instead of being able to blame others. And they're going to have to use their popularity, not to make difficulties, but now in order to get things done.
Just like his compatriot J.B. Priestley, whom we heard last week, A.J.P. Taylor failed completely to recognize that Czechoslovakia was on the brink of returning to totalitarian rule. He saw the greatest threat to the country not in Stalin's Soviet Union, but in the possibility of a resurgent Germany.
The Czechs have had 7 years of German occupation, and they'll pay any price not to have it again. That's the reason for the Russian alliance, which is supported by everyone in the country, of whatever class and whatever party. As the Prime Minister said in his speech the other day, the Russian alliance is for us not merely a question of safety, but even of existence. if a great Germany is ever restored, Czech democracy and Czech independence will again be lost.
At the time Taylor was in Prague, in the summer of 1946, the expulsion of Czechoslovakia's German-speaking minority was already well underway. In one of the most drastic and controversial transfers of population anywhere in peacetime history, 3 million German speakers were expelled to Germany. Britain and the United States both had misgivings about the policy, but A.G.P. Taylor was vehement in his support.
No one who's seen and heard what the Germans did in this country can doubt that it's impossible now to keep Germans here as citizens. This terror wasn't the act of a few SS men. It was really the expression of the spirit of a whole people. The Germans have to go. But their transfer is being organized as decently and as humanely as possible. And all the same, the great majority of Czechs don't like it. They don't like the whole thing. They feel that it's a defeat for the principles which they try to defend. A defeat imposed upon them by Hitler, but a defeat all the same. They're ashamed, as we in England were ashamed, at many of the methods which we had to use in order to win the war.
To this day, the expulsion of the Sudeten Germans remains a sensitive topic, and only since 1989 has real debate about the expulsions and their consequences really got underway.
From the Archives with David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's program. We want to thank you so much for joining us, and take care.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.